Hello, I'm Dr. Roger Steiner, Chair of Ophthalmology and Director of the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute at the University of California, Irvine. This blog is to summarize one of the highlights of Monday's American Academy of Ophthalmology meeting, and that is the two sessions that are dedicated to cataract. The Cataract Monday sessions have really become, I think, a highlight of the Academy for any anterior segment cataract surgeon who attends the Academy. In the morning, there's a session that goes on for about 4.5 hours on various challenges in cataract surgery, co-moderated by Bill Fishkind and David Chang. The format is interesting because it is based on cases that illustrate various challenges and then a set of short, typically about 3 5-minute talks related to the general subject, not specifically to the case, and then a panel discussion about both the talks but also the management of the particular case that illustrates the area in question, and there are audience response questions before and after to engage the audience but also to measure the impact of the material that has been presented and see if it influences people's opinions. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. In the afternoon, this is followed by a 2-hour structured symposium by ASCRS. This was co-moderated by Ed Holland and Steve Lane this year, and the panelists for that were Eric Donenfeld, Tom Samuelson, and myself. We had a series of 7-minute presentations really covering the entire range of complications in cataract surgery and challenges in cataract surgery, followed by a 3-minute discussion after each of the 7-minute didactic presentations. I'd like to emphasize one aspect of that, which was the continued, I think, intense interest on toric IOLs. And I believe this is coming up because of the fact that astigmatism remains a challenge. We are all increasingly appreciative of the impact of uncorrected astigmatism on patients and their quality of life, and the desire to minimize the postoperative astigmatism and do it in the best possible way. And also the potential for having issues and complications with the lenses and or astigmatic incisions and how you manage that. So a lot of discussion about the dealing with the posterior corneal astigmatism issue that had been raised by Doug Koch a couple of years ago and continues to have intense interest as well. I'd like to, though, maybe just hone in on one aspect, which is what do you do to get accurate preoperative measurements that drive your decision-making. Warren Hill gave a very nice presentation that used analogies to the multiple instruments used in flying an airplane, because sometimes an instrument can fail, or one of the instruments gives a different reading than the other instruments. And he used that parallel or that analogy for what you do when you're doing preoperative astigmatism measurements, and they don't always line up, and then how do you decide? So redundancy was really, in a sense, the theme of his talk. And so in the case of astigmatism, you have multiple choices. You have the automated keratometry readings that come out of the IOL master or lens star, that being the most commonly used preoperative measuring devices. You have SIMK readings from corneal topography. You have the corneal topography map itself that you eyeball. And then there's always manual keratometry with one of the various devices, which some people do routinely, other people only do when there is a disparity between the other readings, which is my personal practice. I have two of the old Hoogstroy-Cheval keratometers in the office, and if I get a significant disparity between the automated readings and the topography, that'll be one of my go-to instruments for a tiebreaker. Dr. Hill just emphasized repeatedly how important it is to look at that carefully and make sure that your readings make sense, and that if there is a disparity, try to get to the root of it. It could be something as simple as dryness causing an artifact in the surface, or it could be something much more profound, including even previously unrecognized low-level form frost keratoconus, which nevertheless could have a real impact on the quality of vision with an intraocular lens. In my talk that followed Dr. Hill's talk, we then continued expanding on that theme, and I talked about the dealing with complications specifically from toric IOLs. The first being, how do you figure out where the lens is? And I recommended the very simple method of using one of the apps that are available for smartphones that function as levels. And I've talked about this in previous blogs as well, but there's the iHandy level, which was not designed for this. This was designed as a carpenter's level, but easily used for ophthalmology. The other being a app that was designed for ophthalmology called Axis Assistant. That one can also be used for marking the lengths of a astigmatic keratotomy or limbal relaxing incision, for example. So it's quite versatile. You use the slit beam oriented along the direction of the implanted toric IOL, and then pull back and put that on the edge of the smartphone with the level display active, and you'll see exactly what orientation the toric lens is. Once you determine where it is, you have to figure out where you're going to put it. And you can put it on the postoperative residual steep K, which will have been influenced by your cataract incision. The other method is to use the Berdahl Hardin calculator that you can get online at www.astigmatismfix.com. Astigmatismfix.com lets you download this at no charge. And what it does is it uses refraction. So it takes into account your posterior corneal astigmatism. And since it's a pseudophakic patient, not a phakic patient, the refraction actually is quite accurate and not being influenced by any cataract. So in the post-op situation, refractive information is quite helpful. And you plug that in, and it will basically do an automated vector analysis and show you the position of minimum astigmatism and tell you how much residual astigmatism to expect in case there's some issue of potentially doing an IOL exchange rather than an IOL rotation. And then finally, once you know where you want to put the lens, you then have to get it there. Fortunately, this can be done through small side port incisions, and if the patient is within a few weeks post-op, you can rotate the lens quite easily, just with a little viscoelastic to open up the minimally sealed space between the anterior and posterior capsule, and then rotate the lens into position. Now, sometimes the lens will not stay where you put it even the second time around, so the two options in that case are to either put in a capsule tension ring or to keep the haptics in the capsule bag, because these are, in the United States, all single-piece lenses designed for sulcus fixation, for capsular fixation, not for sulcus fixation. It's dangerous to have the haptics in the sulcus with the one-piece acrylic lenses. And the TrueLine lens is also designed only for capsular fixation. In the case of the AMO and Alcon one-piece acrylic lenses in the U.S., you can bring the optic anterior and capture it in the capsule rexus, assuming the rexus is smaller than 6 millimeters, and that will absolutely fix the lens in place. But if you do that, you need to have assessed preoperatively whether there is enough space between the iris and the anterior capsule that this can be done safely without risking iris chafe, pigment dispersion, and inflammation. The alternative that has been touted as working pretty well, and I have not seen any series large enough to really show whether this is accurate or not, but is to use the capsule tension ring. So you put a capsule tension ring after the IOL is in position, and that hopefully pins the peripheral haptics into position and keeps them stable. Some thoughts on astigmatism and toric lenses. I hope you find this interesting. I'm Roger Steiner on behalf of Medscape. Thank you very much for viewing.